I don't want this to sound like a shot against Gerard Gallant, because it's not. But something happened to your team when Peter DeBoer took over. More aggressive, the possession-hungry team, that Vegas squad that we had become used to sort of reemerged. What did Peter DeBoer mean to this team the moment he took over behind the bench?
A lot, I think. More than anything, I think it was a wake-up call for a lot of the guys. I don't want to say we're too stagnant, but I just felt like because of the success the team had the first year and the following year, some people are getting comfortable, and that's how it is sometimes. So I think first and foremost, it kind of woke people up, and then second, I think he's smart. He's a very smart coach, and a lot of his teaching points, you practice them all the time, and then when they actually work, then all of a sudden you grow confidence in the coach and learn stuff like that. So it wasn't any major changes, to be honest with you. It was just a lot of tiny little things. But the more he hammered it down, the more we started doing it, the more success we saw out of it. And so I think it just grew more belief in the players and the system.
Berkey?
Paul, it's Berkey here. Thanks for coming on with us, Paul. You won a national championship at Denver. Tell us what that was like.
It was fun. It was fun. I think the year before they won, we were expected to finish like seventh in our conference, just in the conference itself, just because the team before lost their starting goalie, their best defenseman, a bunch of forwards. So we kind of came in there there was high expectations. Obviously, we didn't know what to expect, and we started a little slow. And then I think we just kind of turned it on. And after the first 10 games, I think we were 5-5. And then the rest of the way, we found our groove. And it was a combination of having, seven freshmen, but also having seven seniors. And the leadership on that team was incredible. And if you looked at the lineup, obviously we had stud players on the team, but we also had, every line stepped up in a different way, and every single guy contributed. And I think that was a combination of having some young guys playing with older guys and vice versa, and everyone kind of knowing their role.
Justin?
I can say, as someone who played against you in university, that steamrolled is an accurate assessment, as I was on the University of Alaska Anchorage. We were off purely prey for those Denver teams. I roomed with a guy that you played junior hockey with by the name of Charlie Kronschnabel, and he told me that in junior, your nickname was Statsny because you were a big hockey stats guy, someone who kind of knew all the numbers. Are you still like a big hockey stats guy? How does that come to be? Because there are still some hockey nerds within the hockey NHL these days. I know that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't try to flaunt those stats at all. I mean, I'm always aware of what's going on and things I'm interested in. So whether it's hockey, whether it's finance, whether it's cultural news, but yeah, I think it's good to know the stats. I think it's not. I don't just look at the stats. I think I watch a lot of hockey and. I love the game, and then I love learning. I love seeing different things and seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work. So,
yeah.
I'll say one thing I don't do is I don't look at statutes ever. And I think I did early in my career, and I was too caught up in it. And then now I never look at it. So, I watch enough games, watch enough players to see how guys are doing. And I can tell you their exact numbers, but I can tell you they're playing really well. They're not playing really well. And eventually the stats will come. And that's something I've learned as I've gotten older.
And we're talking to Paul Stastny, the Vegas Golden Knights. One of my favorite historical stats involves your father, Peter Stastny, one of the greatest players the game has ever seen. We think of the 80s as this high-scoring, high-flying decade of hockey, and it certainly was. And while Wayne Gretzky was the number one scorer in the 1980s, I'm not so sure that people would guess number two, but it's your dad, Peter Stastny, who I always felt never gets the accolades that he deserves for being that outstanding player in the NHL that he was. I remember first seeing him in the 1976 Canada Cup. That Czechoslovakian team was outstanding. How much of your dad's career were you able to absorb, if anything, as a young kid?
Not too much, but someone asked me this the other day. I think as I've gotten older, I've obviously come to appreciate him a lot more. I think when I was younger, I just knew him as a dad and the coach trying to help me out. As I got older, what it was? It was my first year pro when I played with Sakic, Footy, Turgeon, Le Perrier. There might have been someone else, but all those guys played played with my dad at one time, played against him, you know, so then I got, you know, it really told me stories more about, you know, what kind of player he was. And I think my first couple of years, I was like a sponge, you know. I tried soaking up as much information, especially from older guys, knowledgeable guys, good, smart players. And, you know, that's where I got a lot of stories. And I started, I mean, I have all the respect in the world for my dad, you know, the way he raised me, what he did with his family, what he sacrificed for us and what he's done on the ice. I think as you get older, you come to understand the history of the game and really come to appreciate it a lot more.
How much would your dad talk to you about, you know, international tournaments? This was, you know, well before he joined the NHL, well before any of these players did. The only chance we got to see players like your father was at international tournaments. How much would he talk to you about, like, the 76 Canada Cup? You know, Bobby Holik's dad played in that tournament. Thomas Cabrelle's dad played on that same team as your father. How much would he talk about those old international days?
Yeah, you know what? Anyone who knows my dad is, you know, he's a quiet guy, and I think once he's comfortable with you, once he likes you, once he can trust you, then he kind of opens up. So a lot of the stories I hear aren't, I never ask him these stories because I was, you know, it never comes up to, you know, I never think about it. But a lot of times when we're at parties, when we're at get-togethers, you know, people will ask him stories like that, and that's when I kind of just perk up and start listening, and that's where I hear a lot of those stories is when different guys ask. So just to me, it's always fascinating to hear, and it's stuff that I don't even realize it. And then, you know, he'll suddenly bring up something about playing a tournament like that with some of these players. I was like, well, I thought I knew that, but I didn't know too much. And then I'm like, tell me more. And then he'll really kind of dive into the details.
That's awesome. Berkey, go ahead.
Yeah, I used to sit next to your dad at the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee meetings. So I got to spend a whole day with him once a year. He's a really bright, really good guy. What a joy that is. Talk about a little bit. He was famous for international hockey, but you've done quite a bit too. You represented Team USA at the World Championships in 07 and then the two Olympics in 10 and 14. How have you enjoyed your international experiences, Paul?
Yeah, I loved them. I loved them. I think he was a big factor in kind of pushing me to play in those tournaments. And I think sometimes here in the U.S. and North America, we get caught up in you know, once the season's done, we're exhausted. You know, we just want our summer to start right away, especially if you make playoffs. But I think it's nice to listen to older guys and listen, you know, because they've been around, they are a lot wiser, so they understand. And, you know, after a couple of weeks, you know, you take a couple of weeks off anyways, and then you go play an international tournament. It's always, it seems like a long time. And then, you know, in hindsight, you never have regrets, that's for sure. And I think anytime you get to represent your country, it's always an honor, you know, especially wearing the red, white, and blue. But yeah, whether it's Olympics, whether it's World Championships, all those tournaments, you know, you play with some of the best players in the world. You play with up and comers, you play with older guys, you have a mix of everything. The coaching staff, you know, there's so many cool people to be around. And I think, I've had a blast every single time. And you know, I would recommend for anyone that any of the young guys that always ask me about, you know, whether they want to play in World Championships. I think Olympics is, I mean, Olympics is the Olympics, so no one's going to say no to that. But World Championships, I think, is growing, and it's great to see for the game of hockey and great to see, especially in North America.
Justin? Paul, I want to get your take on the evolution of hockey sticks over your career, because I'm pretty sure in college you either used an all-wood or a two-piece with a wood blade. That's not the case now, but how was the transition for you to sticks today? Because I think you're someone who stuck with the old style for quite a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I had the wooden sticks. I actually never used a junior stick in my life. I never used like a 60 flex or 70. So, no, my dad would, I would use either my dad's old sticks or I would use Pavel Dimitrov. Because when I was getting a little older, Dimitrov was one of my favorite players. So you know, we were good friends with him. So my dad was working for the Blues. So obviously, you know, he'd get some sticks from the trainers. So I never come to appreciate a whippy stick. But at the same time, I think my dad is always adamant on having, you know, the stiffest stick possible for face-offs, for stick battles, because I don't know if you watch his game, you watch my game, we don't really try to shoot the puck from outside 25, 30 feet anyway. So a lot of the goals, you know, all the goals are either in front of the net or rebounds, so or tipping. So for us, you know, shooting from that far, you know, obviously it's nice to score from that far, but you rarely get to score unless you're an elite shooter. So I had the one piece, and then, you know, then all of a sudden I started having issues with factories, Sherwood kind of switched factories. So then you know, I mean, you guys wouldn't be able to tell, but since I've been used my whole life, I could tell they were all of a sudden they were whippier. They were made differently. Yeah. So I think Olympic year, Easton made wood sticks for me, so they were similar to my old Sherwoods. And then I tried switching to one piece, and I tried switching to Easton or Bauer right away. and I just never had the feel for it. And Sherwood actually made a one piece, and I told him I'd give it a try, and I actually liked it because it really felt like more of a the wood stick, where it was a lot heavier on the bottom and a bigger blade, kind of for face offs for myself. And then you know, now I have Warrior, but the Warrior stick, same thing, is it does just feel old school, where, you know, guys kind of always trying to make fun of me, but then when I give them my stick, they can't shoot at all, so I don't feel that bad.
Are you this fanatical about things like skates, for example, or is this fanaticism just reserved for sticks?
So, yeah, you know what? There's guys like Van Riemsdyk, Pacioretty, Steen, guys I played with are just, they get in my head, and they're so picky about certain things. And I've always been picky about certain things. But you know what? In a sense, it's kind of like a process where you're trying to find every little advantage you can, and whatever makes you feel more comfortable and better out there, why not do it? And I think as I've gotten older, I've come to do that a lot more. And it's not just me. I think that's how the leagues change. Where I came in the league, it was a lot more old school. It was, you know, everyone just kind of go out there, play. The diet was different. The training was different. And the game just evolved. And that's what I mean. That's just in every sport like that, right? So I think you look at every advantage, and you look at the top players, whether, you know, you look at a guy like Crosby or Ovechkin, they came in at 18, 19, dominated, and now they're, 85, so they're 34 and 32, and they're still dominating, and they want to keep playing. You look at, you know, the Roger Federer of the world, or LeBron James, and so I think you see sports science change so much, and you want to try to do every little thing, and whether that's off the ice, on the ice, or whether it's diet, or whether it's mental, it's fun to be part of the process and keep getting better.
Okay, so that's interesting you mentioned Roger Federer, because from a training point of view now, one of the great debates is it better to be a Tiger Woods or a Roger Federer, to specialize early and just focus on the one sport, or be multi-sport, learn a lot of different things, and then specialize later on? Which one were you, Paul?
I was multi-sport my whole life. I never... You know, and I think that's the European background in me. I think the minute the season was over growing up, I think I never played, you know, I don't want to say never, but we didn't skate in the summers. We kind of maybe did hockey camps, you know, a two-week hockey camp there in August or late July. But there's a lot of tennis, a lot of soccer, a lot of stuff for agility and outside stuff, just to you know, keep having fun. And then also when the hockey season came around, you were excited again and never really got burnt out. And then it wasn't, it's still like that for me now. I think there's been summers where I try to focus so much just on weight training and just hockey to actually start off and have a bad season or bad start this season, because you try to get too serious. And, you know, as a body standpoint, I just feel like when you start doing other sports, especially in hockey, because it is such a, it's a little of everything. You know, I think golf's different. I think baseball's different because it's, you know, kind of very, it's just you against no one else and there's no outside factors. I think with hockey, there's so much free flowing going on that playing those other sports does help prevent, little injuries or nagging injuries that, you know, maybe if you just specialize in only certain exercises and certain things, I think those things come up more often.
Berkey?
You played in some really good hockey markets, Paul, but Vegas has a little different feel from anywhere else, I think. How's it been in Vegas?
Yeah, it's been crazy. I think it's, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, the first year, Vegas was here. They were unbelievable. They didn't lose, you know, more than two games in a row until the Stanley Cup, until the finals, to be honest with you. So you didn't know what to expect the next year. And then I think from sold out preseason games to just the excitement of the fans. But also you got to give credit to Kelly and George for building good product. Our owner, you know, the way he runs things top down is, that guy wants to be successful in everything he does, and you can see it just the way he kind of presents himself and carries all his businesses. So I think everyone wants to have fun, but everyone realizes, you know, much more fun is winning, and it's a lot easier when you're playing an atmosphere like this. It just seems like even in playoff time, I mean, it's just another level. I think during the regular season playoffs, you just realize, like, wow, this is, you know, never been part, you know, never seen anything like it, which is, I think the fans are, you know, I think in Canada, the hockey Americans are crazy, and sometimes they know too much about hockey, so, you know, they get, you know, they can get on top of you a little bit. Where I think in Vegas, because, you know, the fans, the hockey's great, they love the hockey here, and they're still kind of learning about it, so I think everyone's just having a good time, because, you know, after the game, everyone's probably going out to dinner and going out, so just everyone seems in a better mood, and that's what my wife and, you know, a bunch of the girlfriends and wives say is everyone's respectable in the crowd, even opposing fans are there.
Justin?
I'm just wondering, when I look at the NHL today, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but the pace has gotten so fast. The game moves so quick, and all the young players who come in the league today are exceptionally skilled and speedy. We talked to Shea Weber on Monday, who said that sometimes you have guys who don't necessarily think the game as well. They've had speed and skill coaches since they were 6, 7 years old, but it's sort of a different brand of frenetic hockey, and that's the word I think of sometimes, is that it looks a little frenetic. You don't play that way at all. You have a thoughtful game, and you seem to pick things apart a little bit. Do you find that you're able to gain some advantage by sort of playing at a pace that's a little bit more thoughtful amidst all the chaos?
Yeah, I think we talked about that. I think that with these young guys, they're so skilled, they're so fast, and I skate with a lot of young guys in the summers. I skate at the University of Denver, so you see a lot of those guys, and I mean, it's insane when you see what they can do in one-on-one drills, three-on-three hockey, kind of shinny hockey. Mm-hmm. But at the end of every summer, we always kind of play the pros versus the college guys. And once we start playing the body a little bit, once we start controlling the puck a little bit, slowing it down, it just seems like they get lost a little bit out there. But a lot of these guys, I mean, it's hard. Like I said, you can teach anyone to be as fast as possible, and you can teach someone to stick handle all day and shoot all day, but you know, can you teach him, you know, where to be in the right spot, or where to, you know, how to react when you don't have the puck, how to, you know, how to find ways to get the puck, how to get on the forecheck. And I think that's what, you know, the smart guys do really well. And I think that's what you try to do is when you see some of the young guys that are so powerful, they're so fast, so skilled, you know, first and foremost, you want to give them the job. You want to give them the puck as quick as you can, because they, you know, they can beat guys one-on-one. But then I also, you know, I try to teach them, try to help them and realize how important puck possession is and getting the puck and, holding on to that puck, you know, and I feel like the best players work that cycle, work that puck, and you know, eventually it causes the other team to get tired and fatigue and make mistakes instead of, you know, just trying to be a one-and-done type of player. Where, you know, young guys, you know, where you really see the scale of the game is 3-on-3 or shootouts. You know, 3-on-3 or shootouts. Right. You know, you can put those – there's so much room out there and there's so much skill that it's just – you can see guys try to beat everyone. But what frustrates me the most is when I watch an overtime game and, you know, there's whatever 3 minutes left in the game, and you know, a young guy gets out there fresh and he tries to beat three guys. And to me, that just, you know, it drives me crazy, because overtime, you know, once you have the puck, you should have the puck the rest of the time. And you know, also if there's nothing going on in the zone, it's hard to score if you just play a man-on-man defense. So it's just, you know, there's things that are unbelievable that, you know, kind of take fans out of their seat that they can do stuff, and then there's stuff that can be frustrating. But you know, it's our job to try to teach these guys, you know, other things about the game that they don't learn from their skills coaches, or they don't learn when they just do one-on-one stuff.
You're such a thoughtful guy and great hockey player. Paul, thanks so much for stopping by today. Look forward to seeing you back on the ice whenever that is. Either way, stay safe, stay healthy. Best to you and your family. And from our program, a special hello to your father. He was clearly one of our favorite hockey players.
All right, well, I'll tell him that. Stay safe, guys, and hopefully we'll see him. Who knows, a couple of weeks, couple of months, who knows. We're all optimistic here.
Fingers crossed. Thanks, Paul.